SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 15 into hour two on this Thursday. Casey has been on the phone with the streaming company who knows they've got some sort of an issue, and they apologize, but they're something on their end, and they can't even provide Casey with a timetable. But if anything you missed later, you can catch on the archive and on the pod. My answer to these queries is always the same. No trouble on SiriusXM. With all due respect, those of you that actually pay a dollar a week, no problems for you. Tony Black standing by and joins us now. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I don't have the car here that has the SiriusXM in it, and I hope that the streaming company sends me an apology, because don't they know that a big part of my morning is listening to Steve Bick at the races? Don't they know that? They've interrupted my whole day.
Well, Tony, I know it's ruining a lot of mornings. It's funny how many people, I've heard from a lot of people that have said really nice things, actually, and that have listened over the years and are being provided the opportunity to listen daily, in some cases for the first time in a long time, and they're really enjoying. I mean, even though we don't have as much racing to, specifically to talk about as normal, just hearing the conversation and just talking about horses and it's giving people a distraction. And if it's, 3 hours a day and, at least it's, part of the day's, keeping people's minds occupied. That's happy to do it.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you're an Eclipse Award-winning broadcast for horse racing. I mean, I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. Just listening to some of the interviews with the interesting people that you have on. Even if there isn't a lot of racing going on right now, there is some racing to be talked about. Not a lot. But just to have the information and being informed what's going on in other parts of the country, and especially with this situation that we're all faced with and adjusting to, that we've never been faced with anything like this before. But you have an interesting program. If a guy like me that's been on the racetrack since the day he was born, can say you have an interesting program, because I've seen so much of racing, and I've seen, over the years, all the transition and everything that goes on in racing, and I still find you interesting. So you're my man, and I feel left out this morning. I'm sorry I haven't listened to your broadcast to be knowledgeable of what you've been talking about, but I'll wing it with you, buddy.
Well, Tony, how have you been spending time? Last week, you were doing the yard, and you were trying to corral your mother, who at 95 is more difficult than your kids.
Yeah, it really is, because telling her she's not going to the dollar store, her favorite store, There's a lady that worked till just a couple years ago, and she's 95 years old, and has some substantial savings, and she's got to go to the dollar store. I'm going to buy stock in the dollar stores when this thing's all over, because people like her will be flocking to them, and then their first full quarter will be skyrocketing with all the revenue that they're losing now. They'll make up for it. Just like I was looking at, I've always been interested in that interest in Penn Gaming and the REIT that they floated after that. Penn Gaming is down into the $10 or something like that. What do you think people, and their stocks that they depend on, the revenue of the casino and horse racing. What do you think when this is over, people are going to do. They're going to be flocking to casinos and racetracks. So in the first full quarter that that this thing's over, you'll see the revenue comes right back and those stocks will be booming. They're like buying opportunities right now. My brother and I have delved into stock market since, 25, 30 years. But it's an interesting time, and you just got to hope for the best when it comes to the health of everybody around you. Jersey's a hot spot. I have cousins in North Jersey, and, of course, that's where the hottest area for corona is because of being right up against New York. And so far, knock on wood, keep my fingers crossed, everybody's healthy in New Jersey. And my 95-year-old mother, who thinks I'm driving her crazy because she says, I've been through world wars. I get through these things. I said, well, you're going to get through it my way this time.
Well, like everybody else, you know, Tony, reaching out, mm-hmm. touching base with people and everybody doing what they can and dealing, you know, with the situation, as they have to, essentially. And, I'm sure at parks, where, they're letting everybody train, but there's really no timetable for resuming, and it makes it very hard. You don't have. I think the uncertainty is the biggest challenge. Just kind of treading water and not knowing when an end is going to come, because there's just no way to project one.
Right, Steve. And, it was something that you couldn't plan for, especially in the horse racing business. It hit us suddenly, and everybody shut down all of a sudden. There was no planning for the shutdown. But when it comes to shutdown, and I mentioned this to you yesterday, before year-round racing hit a certain area, our area, Jersey, Pennsylvania, it was standard. Come after Thanksgiving, we would shut down Garden State. We wouldn't open for training until March of the year, when Garden State would be, they would open the beginning of March, so people could, that didn't send their horses to Florida, would bring their horses off of the farm or start training them on the farm. And by April, we were up and running for the next 9 months. And people forgot about that. And there's a lot of people that never knew that because they're new to the business as owners and trainers, and they never saw where we only raced. And only the wealthy, the best horses were shipped to Florida. I can remember the first winter meet when there was one year-round racing, but we had a winter meet at Liberty Bell Racetrack. But it still ended, and there was still a couple months off. In Maryland, you used to go to Bowie for a few months, but there was still a few months off in Maryland. It wasn't absolutely year-round. But since we've become accustomed to the year-round racing, and Kylie owns horses, and she's, upset. Oh, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I say, you send them to the farm, unwind them, back off their feed, bring them in when you think the racing's going to start again, and start galloping them. I said, we used to send these, claiming horses to the farm for 2-3 months. And at the end of the year, guess what? They ran just as many times, if not more, than what they're running now on the average. I can remember a horse. And the trainer had it for a year's period of time. And this horse was a cheap horse. Well, it was, I say cheap horse. He ran from anywhere from $10,000, $12,000 to $4,000, $3,500, $3,000. And his name was Greek Music, if you ever looked a horse up.
Oh, I think sure.
In one 12-month period, he ran 30 times. In 12 months. A 12-month period. I don't know if it was from January to December or what, but, it was a 12-month period, and I never forgot, because Charlie Coco trained the horse, Greek Music, a little chestnut horse, and I used to get on him. I wasn't even riding at the time. This was in the 60s, but I got on many a horse till I started riding, and then still got on many a horse. But these horses used to run just as many times and didn't go to Florida and race, and they were off for 2 to 3 months without racing in the tri-state area, Jersey, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania. I can remember when in 19, whatever it was, I still had the bug, 70, New York opened earliest of ever. Guess what it was? It was Aqueduct, March 1st, they opened. Earliest ever, they opened. And now, you know, we're year-round, so we never close. But the face of the game has changed, and people, I guess, that weren't in it in the 60s and 70s, and I actually was in it in the 50s when I can remember. I was born in 51. My uncle was riding until 67, so I used to walk from here to Garden State and watch him ride from my house. You know, people forgot what racing was, and never, they don't know what racing was then. And you know the thing about it is, when Garden State opened and had been closed for 3 months, there was that air of the product is back in town. It was product anticipation. Here, the circus is coming to town, and everybody flocks to the racetrack. Well, I see this happening after this terrible situation that we're going through is over. Casinos and racetracks will go right back to doing maybe even a little better for a short period of time than what they did prior to this. You know, when people, you'll say, well, people are going to be short of money. Well, you know what? Not to be cruel and mean. The people that are short of money are trying to take that little bit and run it up because they're not satisfied with the little bit because they can't do nothing with it. So you get people that are short of money going to the casinos. You get people that haven't been going to the casinos that have stopped piling money, going back to the casinos and the racetrack and then betting money. So we're going to survive this.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's a big transition in everybody's lifestyle. But believe me, it ain't going to close racetracks and it ain't going to close casinos. We will recover and watch the first full quarter that these tracks are back in business, the casinos are back in business, the first full quarter, like, you know, the third quarter of the year, maybe it'll be banner revenue and it'll be unbelievable. That's the way I see it, but I'm just a dumb job that sat on the ground and bounced off the ground, hit my head too many times.
Well, you brought up, Tony, the yesterday we were you were listening, and you brought up a really salient point about the, you know, the era when there was no winter racing or you know, just a smattering of winter racing anywhere other than, you know, on the southern circuits and, you know, the traditional winter dates that, you know, that Calder and tropical and so forth, and Hialeah, Gulfstream, etc., and you know, then across the country in that same, you know, in that same vein. But that period, and whenever we talk to you know, Gorey Smith and Kip Elser and you know, horsemen that are in South Carolina, you know, the training centers down there at Camden and Ellery, and you know, that was a big part of any calendar. I mean, it was, you know, giving your horse 75 to 90 days.
Yeah, Middleburg, and that was another one.
Middleburg, absolutely.
Right. That was Merlin's favorite place. A lot of the Merlin trainers had sent them to Middleburg if they were going to lay them up, and then they would come in, you know, to the buoy meet when sometime at the end or middle of the buoy meet. But people, you're right, people did forget that air in racing. You know, I can't even recall numbers-wise how many people after Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving in New Jersey, you know, circuit where Garden State was running, they would come to my mother's house for Thanksgiving dinner, and there was grooms and hot walkers and all the people that I rubbed elbows with, because it was like it was Thanksgiving and a goodbye. You guys are either going to the farm, and I won't see you for 3 or 4 months, or you're going to Florida, and I won't see you for 3 or 4 months or 5 months. And we used to have like Thanksgiving dinner at my mom's house because we knew Garden State was closing, or it was closed just around Thanksgiving, or just thereafter. Just, I don't remember the exact dates, but it would be closed, and it wouldn't reopen for training until March, and then end of March, April would be racing. You know, the dates, I forget exactly what the dates were, but it was a general time period of 3 months, let's say, 3 months. But it was a good time, you know, for racing, and it was enjoyable, and the horses got a little breather most of the time. And like I said to you yesterday, only the wealthy were the runners. The horses that were runners went to Florida. The rest of them went to the farm. And the claimers don't know how lucky they were, because they went to the farm because it cost too much to ship and stable in Florida. You know, if you weren't running in a higher price races or the steak races, people sent him to the farm. Charlie Coco had a little track. That was the guy who my first contract holder, my only contract holder, Charlie Coco. And he would say, yeah, Tom, maybe a few weeks before Garden State opens for training, March, come on out and gallop. So you can gallop these. We'll gallop some on the farm. And I used to go to the farm and gallop them. And he had a, you know, a track, you know, no rail or nothing. It was just a harrowed area with sand and dirt, and you'd gallop them around there, and it would get you back ready to get them to the racetrack, and then in a very short time in March, you'd get them ready to run sometime in April. It was a great time in racing, and I'll never forget Charlie Coco because he taught me how to ride horses. I won my first race for him, first horse I ever rode, and you know, thinking about him the other day, I was thinking, and I won his last race on a horse before he died that he told me one day when, I'll tell you the whole story real quick. I hope I have time. I'm not
yeah,
using
go
up
ahead.
Your time.
Okay. No,
there was a, I went, him and I kind of broke up. I went to Maryland. I was one of the leading riders in Maryland in that 70 period that him and I broke up, and I took my contract. He gave it to me. We split. Then they open up Keystone in 74, October. After Thanksgiving, I went to Keystone, and here Charlie Coco, hadn't seen him for about 2 years. He's at Keystone. So I says, come on, Charlie, let's make amends. You were my best teacher. I love you. You got me started out. You're like a second daddy to me. He says, yeah. He says, come on over, and he says, get on a couple. You don't have to get on much, but ride a few for me. So one day he puts me on a horse, and he says, hey, Tom, you don't want to get nothing with this horse today. He says, probably going to run pretty good, but he ain't going to get nothing, and you just make sure you don't screw it up. I said, yeah, what are you talking about? Okay. You know, this is the way old-timers were. You ain't getting nothing, and they just want to make sure you knew you weren't getting nothing and make sure you didn't mess it up. So, okay, I rode the horse. I'll tell you the name of the horse afterwards because you can look him up. And I guess this was about 74, early 75, late 74. I guess it was early 75. He said, when I came back, I said, hey, Charlie. I said, I don't know what to tell you. I rode a lot of horses for you, and we've done a lot of good together, but this horse, I had nothing. I said, I didn't have to do nothing, Charlie. He was nothing. There was nothing there. He said, there will be next time. I said, I hope so, Chuck. Because I had nothing today. Well, I rode him back next time, and he just aired, and he paid $26. So I didn't know it at the time. Charlie had been diagnosed with bone cancer. You know, and he only had a very short period of time to live. I saw him. I went to the farm and saw him just before the hospital, and then they brought him home to the farm like an old racehorse, and they let him die on the farm. But I thought, boy, I won my – it's almost bringing tears to my eyes now, Steve, because I won my first race, and he promised me to put me on a horse when I graduated. I didn't go to graduation that day. You know the whole story. Put me on
sure.
The horse. The horse ran, won, paid $106.40, first mount ever. And I thought to myself there, you know, after, you know, just in the last few years, I says, man, I won my first race. I won my first race with Charlie. He won my first race, and I won his last race. Hill Cobra, $26. I guess it was, like I said, 74, 75. And you think back to those stories, and you think of how racing, such a great industry, and you got to love the animals, and you can love and hate the jocks, and the jocks can love and hate the trainers and the owners, but it's a great industry, and we're lucky we have somebody like you putting the word out there, Steve, and letting people know just what this industry is all about. And then you get an old guy like me, and I can tell some stories from the past.
Everybody loves it. Everybody loves the stories, and you know, and one of the things that came up yesterday, you know, is just how remarkable the participants in this sport are in regards to adjusting to whatever difficulties arise, and it uniquely qualified, because there's really no business that you could, you know, immediately put on a parallel that has to deal with crisis of, and I don't mean the kinds of crises that, you know, that the industry as a whole has dealt with, you know, that are many times, you know, public perception kinds of crises. I mean, you know, day to day tragedies that strike, and that's losing, you know, horses that have been heavily invested in, losing a foal, having a broodmare, you know, stricken after foaling, and you know, there's so many financial challenges and emotional upheavals in just the, you know, the 365 day a year conducting of this business. And so this ambient pressures that are created by the pandemic, it just feels like, you know, racetrackers and people that are in the horse business are rolling with it like they roll with everything else. And from that standpoint, I think people have a built-in wherewithal, Tony, if you understand my association.
This is just another norm when
yeah.
it comes to the horse business. It's not something that's so unique. The horse business itself is a unique industry, but this isn't making because of this. It's unique, and there's no other industry like it. You know, you see so many people that are successful in so many other industries come into this business, and after a short period of time, they say, you know, I can't, what made me a success in my business, whatever it may be, you know, another business, I can't apply all those rules to this business. You know, it's just, it's a different mindset. It's a different way that you conduct business on the racetrack. It's a unique industry. And you know what? We have a lot of unique people in it. It's nothing like it, you know. And you gotta love it to stay in it sometimes, and sometimes you have to be lucky to stay in it. But the one thing it'll teach you is perseverance, you know, stick-to-itiveness. That's what this business will give you if you stay in it long enough. So whether you're a jockey, a trainer, or owner, you know, and my heart goes out to these owners, because right now, you know, like I said, money going out and very little yeah. coming in.
Exactly.
But and it is tough. It's tough on those. I think, you know, for the owners, because of their overhead, and a lot of owners are trainer owners, but generally speaking, the owner that just has his stable of horses with a trainer, he's taking a beating right now, and my heart goes out to him, because I know the money that's going to be put out with no return for the next few months, and just hopefully the horses benefit from it and there'll be substantial return when we do get back into business. But jockeys, you know what, they have a tough time too, but you know, a lot of maybe the gallop horses and subsidize their income. There's nothing out there for unemployment. They're independent contractors. They don't pay into unemployment, but jockeys will make it too. You know, there's farms that are out there galloping, there's racetracks galloping, and people still need to, you know, get these horses out just to, so they don't go ballistic. And trainers, everybody's just buckling down and making the best of it, trying to get through it. It is a financial hardship, but it's a hardship that can be turned around in a very short period of time when the business comes back. And that is the one point you made that's very clear. That's what we don't really know. When are we going to get the opportunity to gear up and get these racetracks up and running? We don't know. You know, right now we got to focus on, let's all just try to focus on social distancing and staying healthy. The one thing I do during the day is, you know, I take my little girl out for long walks, jog with my son. And the one thing I've noticed, you know, the social distancing in my area, it's, you know, it's made its point. But I see so many fathers and mothers out there walking and bringing their kids around, you know, taking their kids around the block or on long walks and walking their dogs. The one thing that it has done, it's brought families together. They might not be socializing with anybody else. They won't be. But it's brought them together where they're utilizing their time and they're out there with each other interacting. And it is refreshing to see moms and dads walking with 2 and 3 and 4 year olds and 10 year olds and 12 year olds, and me with a 12 and a 14 year old. You know, it's refreshing to see that, even though we maintain our distance and there's not a lot of communication. You know, it's a wave of the hand, hi, I'm on the other side of the street. If I see you coming towards me, I take the dog and the coach, the stroller, and walk to the other side of the street, or they do the same thing. But it's really refreshing to see families. It is bringing families together. You know, not that's not enough upside to say, oh, well, this is a good thing. It isn't. It's horrible. It's terrible. It's something we just have to get through. And hopefully, you know, people will get through it in good health. Of course, there's going to be the downside to that. But we're just trying to stay healthy and hoping that everyone we know can do the same. It's a tough situation.
Well, I appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week. Stay safe, and take care of the kids and Kylie and your mom and everybody. We'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure. Love you, Steve. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Love you too, pal. Tony Black, everybody. We'll take a timeout here. When we come back, we're going to jump in with a visit from John Phillips. Darby Dan, of course, but he's going to visit as the president of the TAA, and release of a statement minutes ago from the TAA, and they're going to move on the grant program that, you know, they have throughout the year, the series of grants for the TAA accredited farms, the aftercare organizations. And they're going to step up and release a round of grant money. And we want John to provide the specifics to everybody. John Phillips joins us next. Steve Haskin in a little bit. Tony just wrapped up. And Rich Eng later. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 15 minutes to the top of the hour. I wanted to kind of slice in here before Steve Haskin joins us, because I saw the release that came minutes ago, kind of an industry kind of an industry advisory, and John Phillips, who, of course, we usually talk to about Darby Dan and all the great history and the great things that go on there. But in this capacity, John, as president of the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, John, good morning and thanks for the visit.
Good morning and thank you for having me. I appreciate the chance to visit.
Everything good at the farm? Everybody, family, and extensive connections all safe?
We are carrying on, albeit at proper social distances. And a whole new set of protocols to keep things going forward, and yet to keep everybody safe. It's really a different world. Things are happening differently, but we're getting by. We're adapting, and it's not as warm and charming as it usually is. But we're getting by, and we're still able to operate, albeit somewhat in a skeletal fashion, but nonetheless getting the job done.
Well, and of course, breeding season continues, and last week there was a little bit of uncertainty for just a short period of time as Kentucky the Agriculture Department issued a little bit of a confusing message, but that was quickly adjusted, and they provided a more distinct directive, and so the breeding sheds continue to operate, and of course, the expanded roster at Darby Dan. Give everybody a Darby Dan update.
Well, it is an expand, and I will say I think the state of Kentucky has done a great job clarifying all those instructions, and they've actually visited a number of breeding sheds to make sure that we are, in fact, doing what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, this is a sport. It's great fun. It's a culture. But the reality is you've got to keep everybody healthy. And so they've issued a number of protocols and practices. For example, no van drivers are getting out of the vans. We take the horses ourselves. All the equipment has to be washed down regularly. Nobody is allowed within, feet of each other. We have no visitors, no tourists, no owners, no agents involved. It's pretty strict here, and all of which is good because this is, it would be really hard to close. It would collapse the industry, I think, if we would close the breeding season. A collapse that we might not even actually recover from. So we're doing the best we can, and fortunately the state of Kentucky and the Department of Agriculture has been right on top of it, and we're moving on with it.
Excellent. Well, just earlier I was looking at the Saturday card that they drew at Oaklawn, and it just so happens that there's a fairly important three-year-old money allowance, and I mentioned that Answer In, the dialed in gelding of Bob LaPenta's for Brad Cox comes back on Saturday, and Dialed In has been really a consistent producer, John, and hasn't really gotten the kind of attention that he deserves because he's thrown lots of nice runners, and just one of the names along with the Fipke Stallions and Tapiture that really has kind of been a part of a renaissance for Darby Dan.
Well, it's thanks for saying that. It's largely because of a team of very talented, hardworking guys that have been able to put a roster together. It's tough competition out there with some of these major farms, but we have been fortunate. We've collected a nice following of people with perhaps willing to gamble a little bit on more modest stallions that have tremendous upside. And the marketplace has responded with that. Reasonably priced horses that I think Dialed In is one of them. He's produced some very useful runners. Guinevere was a key talking horse there, and won over, I think, over $3 million, perhaps closer to four at this point. But, you know, and been consistent with producing some good horses all along. Lepenta's horse has some real talent, and hopefully he'll be able to go forward. The nice thing is we've been able to maintain a consistent mare book size with horses like Capture, who produces a very, very attractive horse, and Clint, who has his first babies now. They'll be being presented this year, and we've been, you know, very fortunate. We're just knocking along, doing the best we can against some pretty tough competition. But you're nice to say we've been real pleased with what we've been able to accomplish the last 4 or 5 years.
How well received was Flame Away? Because you know, knowing that Justify was whisked off to stud as you know, a scat daddy, I imagine Flame Away must have had a nice reception.
You know, I will tell you, he absolutely did. You know, I'm such a brilliant horseman. I knew that was going to happen. you know, the market really responded strongly to him. He has a very full book now. In fact, we've listened to this. We've limited him to 160.
How about that?
Yeah, I know. That was really good. But, you know, it's going to be tricky because there are going to be some of these new stallions that are not quite as prolific and have a stronger libido as others. And so it's a little bit tricky there to just go crazy that first year, although some farms do. But we don't want to get caught, you know, in May with a horse that is no longer interested in his job. So he was very well received. He's very full. He's quite an attractive individual. Looks very fast, and of course, being Scat Daddy is his big asset that people are very attracted to. So he's done better than I would have imagined, and I'm quite pleased. And I'm very happy for Jack Oxley, who, you know, has been working hard in this industry. Just been in this industry for a long, long time. And he really had to convince me that this horse was going to, Flame Away was going to be a superstar. And Jack was right. I was knew he was going to be successful, but not wildly successful like he has been. So I'm glad that Jack is right.
Well, in addition to having, you know, Scat Daddy's looks, the thing about Flame Away, if he passes along the tenacity that he showed on the racetrack, that would be an asset to his progeny, because he was a horse that dug in and never wanted anybody to pass him. And you know, that's one of those quiet elements of a horse's makeup that, you know, you can't train that into a horse so much. If they're born with it, it's a huge asset. And we'll be excited to see Flame Away's produce on the racetrack. I wanted to ask him, and you know, you've also, you know, similarly, actually, with the death of Empire Maker, you've also got one of the few Empire Maker sons standing in Sky Kingdom.
Right. And of course he had Wrecking Crew last year that was very impressive out on the West Coast, and he's very handsome, very big, very much like his father in terms of his looks. So we're excited about these young stallions that we have here. Interestingly enough, we have two. One of Winchell's absolutely stunningly attractive horse by the name of Copper Bullet, and we sort of came into this process a little late, and so we're experimenting with a really pretty radical idea of Winchell actually paying breeders $5,000 to breed to his stallion. And it's unusual, but it also requires the broodmare to go through a sort of a three-phase test. We've had over 300 applications to him, but we've only accepted about 60 mares that are on that program. So it's going to be very interesting. It's a combination of genetics and biomechanics that are required, filters, if you will, that are required to be met in order for the mare to qualify. And if she does, we'll pay you $5,000 just to breed to Copper Bullet. So that's kind of an interesting thing. We like doing crazy things here at Darby Dan. I push the envelope.
I love it. I'm glad you mentioned that. And of course, he was a very nice More Than Ready himself, and out of an Unbridled Song mare. And I imagine there's some very interesting nicking that this will be fun to track and see where it goes. Well, John Phillips with us from Darby Dan, and I certainly wanted to give Darby Dan a spotlight part of the conversation. But John, let's talk about your TAA presidency hat, and just in the last hour, an announcement coming from TAA that should be a very welcome piece of news for a lot of the accredited farms and retraining operations, with the release, early release of the grants that some of the grants that TAA manages.
That's correct. You know, the TAA has two primary functions. One is to accredit those facilities that work with aftercare thoroughbreds, both retraining and as well just pure retirement facilities. And then the other, and that's a very rigorous program that we engage in for those facilities, those organizations to be qualified. But then the other very important aspect, as you mentioned, is the funding aspect. And TAA decided, in light of the situation that everyone is experiencing and the concern that a lot of people have about supply chains and the like, we have two grant periods. This one usually goes out May 1st, but we accelerated that. So just the day before yesterday, I signed checks to 150 organizations. We distributed $1.7 million yesterday, the day before yesterday. They probably are being received today or tomorrow. But those go to our facilities in anticipation of their concerns and also financial stress that they may be under given the national situation we're experiencing.
Give us a snapshot of the grant process and the program. And, you know, TAA came up to speed in literally a blink of an eye. And for those, John, that, you know, that are constantly critical of the way the industry responds to emergencies and crises, the TAA was a instant success. It garnered complete support, and of course Jack Wolf, helped get things going, and Jack serving as the figurehead when TAA was forming. But this was an area that really galvanized the entire aftercare industry that was kind of broken and kind of just there was a lot of backbiting and infighting amongst the aftercare agencies, and the TAA put an end to all of that and really became, you know, the engine on the train.
Well, you're kind of saying, and I couldn't agree more. We have not been around very long, but the idea is that by protecting our exiting horses, those horses exiting from racing, we are protecting the sport, and that's critical. It was an exposed underbelly of the industry for decades, and of course we all recognize that society and the values that society exhibits have changed over the last many decades. Horses are looked more by the public as a companion animal than livestock, the way they used to be perceived, and as such the industry, the sport, needed to recognize the demands of the public. And the concern of the public, and legitimate concerns too.
about horses that exit from racing. Do they have a soft landing? Can they have another career? And, of course, that's what the TAA sought to galvanize across the industry. Not only the facilities, but the high standards for those facilities so that you know if you get accredited, you are a facility that is a 501(c), has good financial records, has a good governance organization behind it, has a facility that meets high standards of care, has horses that are inventoried, that you know where they came from, you know that they're being kept properly. All of these requirements, and they're most extensive. Michael Blowen of Old Friends said he'd rather go through an IRS audit than his accreditation process. But it's very important because we cannot let the industry fail in terms of aftercare. And we have continued to expand. We're now over 150 facilities with over 65 organizations. Many organizations have multiple facilities. And that includes both retraining and retirement facilities, sanctuary facilities, if you will. Both those types of facilities are inspected, sometimes surprise inspections, so that we know those standards are being kept. And importantly, then, if those facilities and organizations are accredited, they also know that they're going to get some funding from the TAA through a vast array of sources. The funding philosophy that the TAA has pulled together over these few years is one of a touch point philosophy. That is to say that any point along a horse's life, there is somebody that becomes involved with that horse that has to contribute to that horse's aftercare when his racing days are done. And so that starts right at the beginning at a full certificate, $25 of every full registration goes to the TAA. It starts actually even before that because we have a report on mare's bred fee, which is a $25 on every mare that gets bred, every thoroughbred mare that gets bred in the United States. $25 of that fee will go to the TAA. And then, of course, it goes on with sales companies such as Fazek Tipton and Keeneland now requiring a percentage of every sale, of every purchase, and from themselves, their own income, a commitment of a certain percentage of those proceeds going to the TAA. So we're developing an ongoing, sustainable funding source for these organizations which go through the rigorous TAA accreditation process. Plus, we have horsemen groups now that are, you know, contributing $5 from every start. New York NYTHA has done a great job of being a super supporter. They now have a claiming fee, so that it's just not breeders, it's not stallion farms. It's not sellers and buyers. It's also the racetracks, which are beginning to get involved. Stronach Group has been a strong leader in supporting aftercare. We're doing a lot of things, so it hasn't fully bloomed yet. But we're making progress, slow but sure, to make sure that every horse that exits from racing will have a soft landing for a period of time, and that's important. You know, It's a humane society philosophy. If you're going to adopt a dog, for example, you've got to make certain representations and guarantees on that dog. But once you've done that, if somebody is negligent in caring for that dog, it's not the humane society's responsibility. It's that person. And we need to get to that person. We need to get the horse to that person that guarantees that soft landing. And we're working on that. We're influencing thousands of horses now every year. So it's coming. It's still got a long way to go. We still have some gaps in our process, but it's really made some tremendous success over the years.
There's been a steady parade of advances in this arena. Yesterday, as it happens, John, spent time with Jen Reutz, and Jen had written a piece for the Horse magazine and basically talking about what is potentially an emergency influx of retirees, for instance, and the response in so many different arenas here with TAA, issuing, nearly this $2 million in grants of money early. Jen and the team at Thoroughbred Makeover, they've opened up their listings for free for people to to advertise their horse that the retrainers can purchase the ad, no cost for the ads. I mean, everybody is responding in every way imaginable, to be in a position to make sure that under this unique pressure, the horses, have the safety net available for them, and with TAA doing this, it guarantees that the 75 plus organizations that are accredited have got the resources they need to operate smoothly. So, John, well done as always. If there's anything that we can pass along to stakeholders and the general public, that loves the animals like the rest of the industry does, if there's anything we can do, don't hesitate to ask.
Well, you've just done it. We appreciate the opportunity to get our message out. It is so important for the industry to be responsive to this, not only this crisis, but generally this issue for all time. And we're making progress. We've got a lot to do. But I really appreciate our ability that you afford us to get the message out. And I thank you very much.
John, stay safe. Best wishes to everybody at Darby Dan and the Phillips family. And follow Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, TB Aftercare on Twitter, thoroughbredaftercare.org. All the information for accreditation and for donation, all at the website, thoroughbredaftercare.org. It's really one of the great success stories in recent memory for the industry. Let's take a break just past the top of the hour. Steve Hass standing by, and Steve, a long time friends of John Phillips and the Darby Dan team. We got Steve Yett and Rich Eng. We'll do a little handicapping, I'm sure, with Rich of today's card, maybe at Gulfstream, and you've got Golden Gate as well, and Oaklawn. Those were the races that I didn't pull up anything from Golden Gate. I've got a little Oaklawn and Gulfstream, though. Back after this, Steve Haskin, next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports.